We're good to go. Okay. This week's topic is Ovid Inish Dina Menapshe. It is Simin Dalin Koshi Mishpa. We're trying to go to Seder now in Koshi Mishpa, different topics and different sugyas that relate to the beginning of Hikos Dayanim. And this is a very important sugya. The last sugya that we covered was Makin Ve'Onshin Shalom Min Adin, which is the second simen in Choshen Mishpat, and this is the fourth simen in Choshen Mishpat. As we'll see, hopefully we'll get around to it, there is a connection between the notion of the taking the law beyond its normal bounds, so when it comes to the prosecution of criminal offenses, and the notion of Avid Inish Din L'Nafshe, which is basically taking the law into your own hands. It means, even in a civil context, where you have to enforce your own rights, and the question is, are you always obligated to wait for Beis Din to enforce your rights, or can you sometimes do it on your own? We've spoken about two different polar ends of the spectrum in terms of one's judicial obligations. One end of the spectrum is that there is a prohibition of going to our courts, of going to secular courts. And the other end of the spectrum is that there's an affirmative obligation to go to Beis Din. But we pointed out that it doesn't mean that all of the territory in between is off limits, that it is okay to resolve disputes without going to secular courts and without going to Beis Din. You just work out the disagreement between two parties. You do it through mediation. You do it through negotiation. Sometimes you can even do it through arbitration outside of a Beis Din. You go to your next door neighbor, who's a very wise and judicious person, and you say, can you meet with myself and my adversary and try to work out a negotiated or mediated settlement, and this very capable mediator personality helps to work things out, that's also okay. So the question is, are you allowed to also avail yourself of the possibility of settling disputes without a third party and without negotiation, but you just take the law into your hands because you know that you are the correct party in a dispute, you know, which is not necessarily such an unusual occurrence, where one person to a dispute knows that they're 100% right and the other person is 100% wrong. So are you ever allowed to take the law into your own hands? So this is a discussion in Maseches Baba Kama, Daf Kof Zayin Amud Beis, and from the sugya there emerges the halacha. Does this come up nowadays in terms of questions that get posed to the Beis Din? So the answer is yes, in a variety of different circumstances. For example, one common question that gets posed is, you have a landlord-tenant situation and the tenant overstays his or her welcome, and the lease is over but the tenant isn't leaving, and the landlord wants to know, do I need to go through the rigmarole of an entire Beis Din process, or can I just kick the tenant out by the seat of their pants because they're refusing to leave and just take the law into my own hands? Or there's somebody who is storing possessions in another person's house. This also often is connected to landlord-tenant situations. A tenant had their suitcases and their luggage and their clothing that they left in the landlord's house, and they leave and they just forget to take, or they neglect to take a couple of suitcases and all kinds of other bundles of possessions behind, and the landlord just doesn't want to have to keep on storing this and watching it forever. And the landlord says, do I need to have a din torah proceeding, or can I just throw the stuff out of the house? I remember that there was a case here in Chicago. There was somebody who was living somewhere and they had their stuff in somebody's house, and then at a certain point the person who was storing the stuff decided that he just didn't want to keep it anymore. He threw it out into the street, and a lot of the stuff got lost or damaged, and the individual felt that they were unjustly harmed in the process, that it wasn't right of the landlord, of the homeowner, to take the law into their own hands in this fashion, and they wanted to know if this was a case that could be brought at that point in time, after the law had been taken into the hands of the homeowner on the homeowner's own initiative. They wanted to know, could there be recourse for the matter to then be brought to Beis Din? And I said that by all means, at that point it could be brought to Beis Din. But the question that was being brought to Beis Din was whether the homeowner had the right to take this measure on their own without recourse to the Beis Din. Yes?
Beforehand, George is throwing stuff in the street, is he obligated to give notice?
Well, that's one of the questions. Are they obligated to give notice? And let's say he gives notice, then the other person ignores the notice. Let's say he gives notice, and the other person claims, and he wants to give notice, but the other person isn't even around. So we don't know if the other person would have not necessarily have received the notice. Leaves a message on the person's telephone machine, and the person might be out of town. We don't know where the person is. So these are all some of the questions that are dealt with by the poskim in this context. Or you go somewhere and there's a sefer that has been missing from your bookcase for 15 years or so because you loaned it to somebody. Because if you loan a sefer to somebody, of course they never return it. That's the minhag Yisrael. So you're just upset because you really wanted this sefer. And it's been missing for years and years. And you don't remember who you loaned it to. And then so you suddenly go to somebody's house and you see the sefer is right there in the middle of their bookcase. So are you allowed to just grab the sefer and walk out of the person's house? Because you know that otherwise they're never going to return the sefer to you. And you just figure this is my only way that I'll be able to receive the sefer. I remember Rabbi Zvulun Chalap Shlita of Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan telling me the story that once he was being Menachem Abel of somebody, that the famous big Rav passed away, and he was looking as he was sitting. It was a long room of guests who were sitting and being Menachem Abel, and he looked in the bookcases and suddenly he saw a very familiar sefer. Then he picked it out as, you know, he's sitting there and he sees that this is a sefer from his own home. This is a sefer that had belonged to his own father. So he, you know, quickly, you know, took the sefer off the shelf and he, you know, packed it up and, you know, made sure that he would take it with him when he left. And the Rebbetzin, who was sitting shiva, apparently saw this surreptitious act of taking the sefer, and she got very upset and she said, "Rabbi Chalap, put back that sefer." You know, so then Rabbi Chalap walked over very discreetly to the woman who was sitting in the front, was sitting shiva, and he just opened up the flap of the sefer and showed the inscription so that she could see that it really belonged to his father. And then she quietly put down her resistance and did not protest any further, and he was able to walk out with the sefer. But he didn't want to embarrass her in public by pointing out that the sefer really belonged to him. But these are all different manifestations of Avid Inishtim and Lenapshe. Are you allowed to do that? Are you allowed to take back what is rightfully yours? Sometimes even by force. Let's say that the woman in question would not have been so relenting have been so accommodating in the end, and would have said, "I contest your right to that sefer." So would he have been allowed to get into a fist fight with her in order to take back what he knew rightfully belonged to him? How far are you allowed to go? So this is the sugi in Baba Kama. So the Gemara there has a dialogue, a discussion between Rav Chista and Rav Nachman. Rav Chista was asking Rav Nachman, how much does a person get to recover if they have been injured by somebody else? If they've been kicked by somebody else's knee? So he said, we give them shalosh, three shkolim, or three coins of some sort. Be'ita, if they're kicked in the foot, they get chamesh, they get five coins. Sinkairis, if they get kicked in the sabot, or somebody hits them with a saddle of an ass, they get 13 coins. The fanda demara, they get hit by the blade of a shovel, or kapina demara, the handle of a shovel. My, how much should I award somebody who was hit by somebody banged them with a shovel? So Shalak Leis, so Nachman said, what exactly happened there? Chista, you're collecting penalties from people in Babel. That's not really something you're supposed to do. Tell me exactly what happened. So Shalak Leis, Tao Gagusa. The Beit Rei, there was a well that belonged to two different people. They would take turns at who was allowed to draw water from the well. The Koyama Vidali Khadminai, also Khad called Dali Biyom and Dolodile. One of them decided to draw the water on the day that was not his, that belonged to the other person. So I'm a lay. So the other guy said, Yom Didiu, eh? It's my day. You have no right to draw from the well today. Well, Ashkoch base. So the other person didn't pay attention. He was taking the water from the well that rightfully belonged to the other person. So Shokabanda the Maram Amachya. So he took the handle of a shovel and he banged the guy in the head. So Rav Nachman said, if that's what happened, Chista, so he can bang him 100 times and beat the guy up who's stealing the water from the well on the day that belongs to the other fellow. The other fellow has the right to assert his rights. Even according to the opinion that says a person's not allowed to take the law into his own hands, that is only when it would not cause immediate harm, but in this case where the offended party was being caused immediate harm, that was irreparable because he wouldn't have been able to recover the water from that day that belonged to him, so he had the right to stand up and to whack the other fellow with the handle of a shovel in order to protect himself. So what is this machlokes as to whether you are allowed to take the law into your hands or not? So the Gemara says it's the machlokes Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman. Rav Yehuda says you're not allowed to, Rav Nachman says you are allowed to. Says the Gemara, if there would be an irreparable harm, so everybody would agree that you are allowed to take the law into your hands. They only argue when there is no irreparable harm, when there's no pseudo, where you could just wait and adjudicate the case in Beis Din. Rabbi Yehuda says that you can't take the law into your hands, just to wait and go in front of a Kamei Dayana, go in front of the COC Beis Din and adjudicate it that way. But Nachnamar, no, you don't have to wait to pursue your case in Beis Din. Other interesting than Afshe, you could take the law into your own hands. Kivin the Medin Avid Lotach, since the person is doing the right thing by asserting the rights, they're not obligated to bother themselves in terms of pursuing the case in Beis Din. So then the Gemara brings various rayos, various proofs that seem to support Rav Nachman's position that you are allowed to take the law into your own hands. And the Gemara finds different ways in which Rav Yehuda would be able to get out of these different proofs. But it appears from the flow of the Gemara that we clearly are supporting Rav Nachman's opinion that a person would be allowed to take the law in their own hands, even when they're not faced with immediate, irretrievable, irreparable harm, and they're not obligated to first pursue the case in Beis Din. Yes?
It also sounds like from this that you could use deadly force in defense of chattel.
Not deadly force. We're not talking about deadly force. We're talking about force. Now, we're talking about there is a difference between deadly force and just force. We're talking about you're allowed to punch the guy, okay? You're allowed to whack the guy with a shovel. I don't know, hit him in the head. It doesn't say the head. You're allowed to hit a person with some sort of force in order to get what rightfully belongs to you. We're not talking about deadly force, per se.
Could we relate this to the concept of a rode?
Could you relate it to a rode? You could a little bit. Here, nobody is out to kill you, per se,
right,
but you could relate it to a rode in the following way. In other words, what is the justification? Somebody is rode after you or somebody else to kill them or to commit a terrible harm to that individual, so then you're allowed to protect the intended victim by going after the rode, right? So what is the theory? What is the justification behind that? So one justification is to protect to protect the other person's welfare. Here you're protecting your own welfare. You have a right to protect your welfare. Another explanation of why you can go after a rode is to save the rode. You're saving the rode from sin. So that's the other theory. So those two different theories that are applied to the case of Rodek are actually applied to the explanation of why is it that we would say Avid Inishtina Lenapshe as well. One is that we allow the person to, in an emergency situation, to assume the mantle of being the Beis Din, of being the enforcer to protect rights, right? Because what is one of the major roles of Beis Din? One of the major roles of Beis Din is the Hatzor Asher Yadosh, to save the oppressed person from being oppressed, to save the poor, vulnerable victims from oppression. That is a major role, as the Rambam says. Remember, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu did with this week's Parsha, with respect to the Benos Yisro, save the Benos Yisro from being attacked by the other shepherds. So Moshe rescued them, right? So we learn from this notion of Moshe rescuing the Benos Yisrael that we see that Moshe was the quintessential judge of, you know, that was really the role that he assumed for Klal Yisrael. So he was asserting his basic role and function for the future in terms of what he did for the Benos Yisrael. He was the Hatzil Ashuk Miad Oshko. He was rescuing them from their oppressors. So therefore, a person sometimes can only needs to rescue themselves from their oppressor, and therefore has to serve that type of judicial function. So that's one theory behind the Ovid Inishtin Lenafshe. The other theory is, no, it's Lafushe Meisura, that you are separating, you are rescuing the person who otherwise has your stuff illicitly from committing the Avera of Gezeila, right? Okay, yes.
I'm sorry, I'm having a problem with the idea here that, you know, we have, especially as American trained lawyers, we understand the idea that force in the defense of chattels is maybe somewhat sort of allowed as long as you don't cross a certain threshold, but generally we disfavor force and use of chattels. That's why we have civil remedies. And halacha, which is supposed to be a level above that, is saying, if I feel I have a civil remedy in front of me, rather than having to go to Beit Din and do it right and follow the system, I can simply brain you with a shovel. It just doesn't comport with the idea of what a, you know.
Halacha is not obligated to follow the norms of civil law.
I'm not saying that it is, but at the same time, it sounds like.
But that's why we have to go through the sugya, because clearly the halakha is not saying that you should go too far, and clearly we're going to circumscribe this halakha to some degree. It can't be that every single person is just licensed to take the law indiscriminately in their own hands, because if they would do so, then we would have just absolute chaos and pandemonium reigning society. We have almost like a might makes right type of atmosphere, so there has to be some type of control and some sort of a limitation with respect to this mechanism. So that's what we have to talk about. So let's take a look, let's go back and take a look at the various rayos that are brought in the Gemara. So first raya is from Ben Bagbag. Now, interestingly, this statement of Ben Bagbag does not appear in Halakha. It's not brought in the Shulchan Aruch. The idea of Avinash Inish Dino Navshe is in Simen Dal in the Shulchan Aruch. Ben Bagbag's statement does not appear in the Shulchan Aruch. As is noted by the Minchas Chinuch, notes that this is in Mitzvah Reish Tzadi Beis, that it's not brought La Halakha by the Rambam, by the other authorities, question as to whether it's La Halakha. Says Ben Bagbag, when you are going to retrieve your own possessions, don't go in a manner which is surreptitious. If you're going surreptitiously and clandestinely, then you're going to look like a ganav. You should do it openly and notoriously. You're going to take your stuff. You better take that shovel, because you have to show that you have nothing to hide. You have nothing to be embarrassed about. You wouldn't be using the shovel if this did not definitely belong to you altogether, right? So therefore, and you have to say to the person, I am taking what belongs to me, okay? So this is a question, because this would appear to support the opinion of Rav Nachman, because Rav Nachman says that you're always allowed to take your possessions, even if there is no imminent loss that would be suffered. So let's just go to the answer. So Ben Bagbag Yechidahu. So the answer there of Yehuda contender is to say Ben Bagbag is a shitas yachid upligi rabban alan. The Chacharim disagree with Ben Bagbag. Another answer is Rabbi Yana Yomi my shibur shina b'din. And when it says break his teeth, it doesn't mean with a shovel. It means break his teeth in the Ira Pilz way. The higher Ira Pilz. And Ira Pilz will be such an effective lawyer that it will be as if you're breaking the guy's teeth. But not that you should literally break the guy's teeth, because you got to go to bed and there has to be some sort of a judicial due process that occurs. So that would be Rav Yehuda's defense for the proof of Ben Bagbag. Okay, however, if that was really true, then it shouldn't be the Lashon that was used over here to say, be'amalo, that you should say to him, I am taking my stuff. Really, it should have said, be'amalo, the Bezdin is saying to him you should give back that shalom notel, that he's taking his stuff and you should let him take his stuff. So that's left as a kasha. So the Lashon does not fit in so well if you don't hold like Rav Nachman, and this is a proof that the halacha is like Rav Nachman. Let's skip the next case because the time limitations. Go to the last case, which is Tashma, two lines from the bottom. Tashma Mimali Khatsa Khabeya Kadiyayan Kadeshem. Somebody decided, and I have cases like, I mean, we have cases like this that come up in the Beis Din. Somebody decides to store all of their barrels in somebody else's backyard. And the person who owns the backyard wants to kind of use their backyard, and they don't want to have to gingerly navigate around the barrels, so they decide they're going to push down the barrels, and maybe the barrels will spill out and the contents will get ruined. So what are they allowed to do if somebody else decides that they're going to fill their backyard with lots of barrels of wine and oil? It sounds like the Baal HaChatzer, the owner of the backyard, is not obligated to first go to Beis Din to exercise his rights, but rather he's allowed to simply throw out the barrels or break the barrels so he'll be able to have use of his backyard. He doesn't have to wait months and months or however long it's going to take to schedule a judicial proceeding to regain the right to use his backyard. So Amram Nachman Bayitzchak explains it once again. Allah Ira Pilz. Mishabeh Yosei LeBezdin. No, it just means that he breaks through the barrel in order to make his way to Bezdin. The only way he can get to Bezdin is to break a particular barrel, so whatever he needs to break to get to Bezdin, he breaks, but otherwise, he should let Bezdin adjudicate the case and take care of it. So as you can see, and as the poskim point out, these various answers and explanations that we give are a little bit of a stretch at best, and they do not seem to be the pashup shot of these cases. Pashup shot is that, in fact, in this type of situation where you have a clear right to your property and possession, and another person is taking it away, you can exercise whatever is the necessary force in order to recover that which is legitimately yours. And in fact, if you take a look at the Rambam in Source Base over here, the Rambam Hilchos Sanhedrin Perek Base Halacha Yud Base, so the Rambam says that explicitly, since the person is acting according to the law, they're not obligated to have to file a claim in Beis Din. They could just take care of business themselves. Even though they would have ended up being whole had they waited to pursue their case in Beis Din, but it's a temporary inconvenience that they're not obligated to endure. So if the other party then says it wasn't right what you did to take the law into your hands, you broke my barrels, or you took stuff that I don't think really belonged to you, but then when the case is adjudicated in Beis Din, the Beis Din determines that the person who was the one who took the law into their own hands acted properly, v'din emes don li'atzmo, and listen to this expression of the Rambam. What's the Rambam say? V'din emes don li'atzmo. The Rambam uses a lashon that he's being done. He's judging. He's adjudicating the case for himself. It sounds very much like we are allowing him to appropriate for himself a judicial function. Ein tosu nesdino. We do not contradict or overrule the judgment that he executed for himself. And the Rambam doesn't seem to have any qualifications whatsoever. Then the Gemara, though, seems to indicate that there really should be certain caveats. You take a look at the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Kuf Gimel Amud Av. Bava Metzia says there are limitations. Let's say I loan you money, and you're not paying back the money. So there's a pasuk in the Torah that says, Bachutz Ta'amot, that if you are a malva, you're a lender, and the borrower is not paying back the money, and you want to take collateral in order to secure your loan, you're not allowed. You're obligated to stay outside. It's a pasuk in Devarim Perichov Dalet. You're obligated to stay outside. It's only a shliach bezdin that is allowed to go inside of the home of the borrower who owes the money, and the lender is not allowed to take the law into his own hands to appropriate property of the borrower. So we see that there are certain limitations. Amavis kaveh lo yishkach anenu, should not take collateral, et al bebezin, lo yikanis lebezin tomash kano, he's only allowed to remedy his situation through bezin and not to enter into the premises of the borrower in order to make himself whole. So we know that there are going to be certain limitations. So take a look at the Rush. So the Rush in Bava Kama is one of the first authorities who tried to summarize what the bottom line rules and protocols should be in terms of the exercise of Avin Inish Gimel and Apshe. Remember, if we just allowed this to run rampant, so then you can imagine that there would be people who would certainly abuse this privilege and prerogative in very disturbing ways. So says the Rush, he says, first of all, when we speak about the right to take your own property, it has to be what we call a chepetz mervur. A chepetz mervur. It has to be an object which clearly belongs to the one who is taking the law into their hands. So it can't be, I know that you owe me $1,000, and therefore I'm just going to grab a bunch of different property items that you own, because those property items are not mine. It has to be like the Rabbi Kalab case. Please forgive me for Rabbi Kalab, if I'm not supposed to be telling this case in public, but I figure you'll be welcome. Like that case, of course he's told this story a number of times, so that case, which is an instance where the person sees that it's their book, it's their safer, it definitely 100% belongs to them, so that's their clear property. And the Kesef HaKadshim, Rabbi Abba Mebuchach, explains this very nicely. Rabbi Abba Mebuchach explains, what's the theory behind this? The theory is that, what am I worried about transgressing over here? Okay, let's think about what is the objective transgression that is going on. A person has to act in accordance with halacha. The transgression would be geneva or would be gezeila, right? So I cannot, he says, just as a very practical definitional matter, I cannot commit geneva or gezeila with respect to an item that is mine. If I'm simply taking back my item, it can't be geneva and it can't be gezeila.
Except it wasn't his. He said it was his father's.
It was his. His father's, his family's. Okay.
But how do you know there wasn't you?
No. Let's assume it's his. Okay. I may not be telling the story perfectly. It was clear without any question whatsoever. Certainly, when the person saw that it belonged to him, she didn't put up a fight or anything. He did not have to get into a punching match, and I'm sure he would not have. He's a perfect gentleman. He certainly would not have done that. He would have left the safer behind him. She would not have let him take the safer. But he showed her discreetly that the safer belonged to him. Okay, but I'm just giving that as sort of an example. But when you see that it's yours, so he says to Rabbi Abam and Buchach, it's simply definitionally not considered to be Geneva, it's not considered to be Gezela. Okay, similarly, so the Rosh says, those are the situations that we're talking about. Look at the second line of the Rosh. We're talking about a situation, everybody would agree. Reuven Shabbat, Ligzo Chepitz, Mishimon, Vaman Shimon, Nik, Nekdo, Vikal Shabbat. Reuven is trying, and I think you would agree that it's the two. Reuven is trying to grab an item of Shimon's that Shimon has in his possession, and Reuven is trying to grab it away from Shimon, and Shimon is simply protecting his property. He can protect his property with force. You are allowed to protect your property with force. You would agree with that, right?
Force, but with some level of
we're off. Only talking about some level of force. Okay, that's all we're talking about over here. Oh, Shira Shimon Chepet Shlo Biyad Reuven. Or similarly, Shimon saw his own property in Reuven's hands. Uvash Shimon Lakakto. And Reuven then is simply taking back his own property that was in Reuven's possession. Reuven Michabo. And Reuven says, no, I insist on keeping your item. Vehika Shimon Reuven. So Shimon gives a blow to Reuven. He hits him. He whacks him at Shiniaklo at Shiro until he permits him to take away that which is justifiably his. Says the Rosh, that's what is required over here. It has to be a chavis mevur. Okay.
Except
number
the law,
two,
the law in Illinois wouldn't let you.
I understand. I understand. I'm giving the halacha. They're dealing with the halacha. I understand that. Then, second, okay, criterion is that it has to be something where you can. It's a dava shiyachol is barer bebezdin. Number one, chavis mevur. Has to be an object which clearly belongs to the perpetrator. And number two, it has to be a davar shiyachol lisbara bebezdin. If the matter would be adjudicated in Bezdin, Bezdin would clearly rule in favor of the perpetrator. It would clearly rule. There's clearly evidence that the object belongs to him. So take a look at the bowl type, okay? Bowl type, third line of the second paragraph of the Rosh here, Paragimel Simen Gimel, Maseches Baba Kama, of an en yachol avar shebedin yachol lahotzia mimenu. If he's not able to establish that he's able, that Bezdin would rule in his favor, lakol kimine loma sheli latsa mamoni asisi, then he has no right to act as the judge and the jury of the case on his own, because it's perfectly possible he would end up losing the case. And similarly, it has to be a chepetz mevur, as we said before, it has to be his item, about lamashkino, but it's just simply to grab collateral with respect to that, to satisfy what he feels is a debt that's owed to him. He clearly doesn't have the right to do that, and as the Rosh points out, that's the Mishnah that we just saw in Baba Metzia. The Tanam Parakam Kabo and Baba Metzia. Okay, so therefore the Rosh really circumscribes the din to require at the very least these two components. It has to be a chavis mevorah, and it has to be a davar shiyachol his barer bebezdin.
What if I lend you something and I said you can have it for a month, and I come to get it, we disagree now as to how long I said you could have it. So it's clearly my item, but I've given you the rights to have it.
So that's if that would be the claim, so then that would be davar that is not automatically something that could be nisparei bebezdin, meaning it has to be that it is an unambiguous claim that is being prosecuted. I think it's a very, very good point. So take a look, turn the page, okay?
What
turn
about the page. The case of the barrels where you're damaging another person's property because you misused your property?
Oh, because there you're protecting your property. You're protecting the use of your property. You have to break a couple of barrels along the way. You're not allowed to indiscriminately start breaking the barrels out of anger or revenge, but if you need, in order to use your property to just get from one spot to another spot, you have no way of doing it unless you break a couple of barrels, so then you're simply appropriating or reappropriating your own property rather than attacking somebody else's property. That's the way that you have to look at it. Yes?
Can you get your money? Can the winning party get his money back for the filing fee and all the money he put into it, plus attorney's fees if he has an attorney? He's the winning party.
So that's a different question. Generally speaking, if there is a claim where it's clear to the Beis Din, as in most cases, that each side has some type of a valid perspective in terms of their view of the merits of the case, and then it's not a completely and that one side is not acting in a fashion which is completely arbitrary and capricious or notorious, then generally speaking, it's expected that both parties should pay their fees, because there's no reason why inherently a person who is prosecuting a claim in Beis Din, the other person, you know, has a valid presentation to make in Beis Din, why the winning party should automatically be entitled to the fees. They're entitled to win whatever the claim is if it is in their favor. But if there are fees to Beis Din, so each party is benefiting from the fact that there is a halakhically appropriate to due process in order to settle the claim, and it's appropriate for both sides to, you know, pay the Beis Din fees equally to the extent that there are any Beis Din fees.
If you owe me $1,000 and I have to take you to Beis Din to get it and it costs me $300, I'm not recovering $1,000. I'm recovering $700. It costs me $300 to obtain my $1,000.
On some level, you're right. On some level, that's the responsibility of the Beis Din system, as Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin writes, and in those types of cases, it's the responsibility of the community to ensure that you have a Beis Din system in place that's not going to drain the party so much of their assets in terms of the Beis Din fees that it would not make sense for them financially to prosecute their cases in Beis Din. So therefore, you have to calibrate the fees accordingly. What many Beis Din, including our own, does is that if it's a small claims case, so the fee for bringing the case is generally either waived or it's made to be a very, very small fee, so that the parties will be encouraged to bring their cases to Beis Din, and they'll be able to receive proper justice in terms of what they're ultimately able to recover. Okay? Now, if you take a look at the Nemuke Yosef, so the Nemuke Yosef makes this point in which he says you need to have a very compelling proof for your case. Take a look, four lines from the bottom of the Nemuke Yosef. Nemuke Yosef is the top source on page 2 from Maseches Baba Kama. Okay? Inami the modele bal dine. It has to be either that there is an unassailable, compelling proof that the property or money really belongs to the perpetrator, or it's a case where there's no contest, meaning where the other party doesn't claim, oh, it's really mine, you really loaned, you really gave me the rights to it, you transferred the rights to it, there is no such claim that's being made over here. That's what the Nemuke Yosef says. He's saying otherwise you wouldn't have these types of rights. But if there is no compelling proof, or the other party simply does not concede that the property belongs to the perpetrator, so then, if the person would prosecute their claim, through hitting the other party and the leg, then he's going to have to pay for wounding the other party. Then he has no right to hurt the other party. Because obviously, and this is the theory behind this, says the Nemuke Yosef, we're just giving the person the right to act in the place of the Beis Din. And therefore, they're not allowed to adjudicate the claim in a way more favorable to themselves than that which the Beis Din itself would have adjudicated. Now, the inherent problem with all of this is that Adam is a karov eitz latzmo, right? That a person is very difficult to adjudicate a claim for yourself when you are the party, because there's nobody more puzzled to be a dayan than the party himself. So you have to say that because of the fact that there is some sort of a hefsed, now we said according to Nachman, you could do this even when there is no hefsed, but right means that ultimately there wouldn't be a hefsed, but right now you're feeling some sort of a hefsed, so we give you some special dispensation in this unique set of circumstances, because it's otherwise, it's possible there's at least some sort of a chance that you wouldn't be able to receive justice, or at least the justice delayed is justice denied on some level. And that's the theory behind it. Look, even though you have the startled, you know, and somewhat disturbed look in your face.
No. Okay, we had this before.
You would agree certainly like to protect your own property, and nobody would question your ability to adjudicate, you know, the case for yourself to protect your own property. We're just taking it a step further and saying if you see your property in the possession of somebody else, you can grab it back.
We had this in the earlier Shurim where somebody owes me money and I have a promissory note and it's clear as day. Remember we said there are opinions that say I can take this to a Goyisha court to collect and bypass Beis Din.
Ah.
Remember we said that? And what's the difference? Wait a second. What's the difference between Avid Inish Dinid and Afshe if I myself take the money or if I go to a Goy and have the Goy take the money for me? It's Avid Inish Dinid and Afshe either way.
Except the Trumas Hadeshin, okay, quoted here in Simon Dalet. Okay, the Trumas Hadeshin is in Simon Shin Dalet of the Chuvas of the Trumas Hadeshin.
He says that Avid Inish,
because this is very interesting, it relates to your point. He says that the principle of Avid Inish Dinid and Afshe does not apply with respect to utilizing the non-Jewish courts or the non-Jewish authorities in order to prosecute your claim. Because he says this is the expression that he uses. He says, "Mekur hadaber." He says it's one thing if you have a Beis Din process in place. If you have a Beis Din, remember those cases that you're describing is where the Beis Din would not be able to effectuate the remedy.
It's a collection.
The Beis Din would not be able to effectuate the remedy. So you're bypassing the Shoftim in order to go straight to the Shotrim, because all that you really need are the Shotrim in that case. That's a different sort of set of circumstances. But here, you need the case to be adjudicated on some level. We're talking about where the Beis Din would have as much authority as the non-Jewish courts. They would have as much authority. So if the Beis Din could get the job done, so then you could take it into your own hands if, you know, that's something that would be more efficient, but you're not allowed to go to the non-Jewish courts, okay, when you could just as easily go to the Jewish courts. That's what the Trumas Hadeshin says, because that's Mechur HaDover. That's considered to be distasteful. That's not a proper thing to do, okay? So that's the Mamah quotes that in Shulchan Aruch. So it's not exactly the same. Now, if you take a look at the Rosh, okay, Simon Bab over here, so the Rosh also in a different Simon in Masechus Baba Kama at the end of the first Perek, so we see that this theory that we are advancing, that it is some sort of a quasi-judicial function, is consistent with what the Rosh says. The Rosh is the machlokes with the Haram Halevi. Okay, of course, Haram Halevi, he says, we have a general principle that if a person grabs, let's say, they have a claim against somebody else, somebody else caused them harm. And it's a type of claim that doesn't fall under the ambit of Shlichus Sayuk Kavdinan, so we're not going to have jurisdiction in a Beis Din. Like, for example, one person chopped off another person's arm. So we say that, well, you lose money because that's like a real loss to lose your arm, isn't it? But it's a Milsad Lo Shlicha. It doesn't happen that much. Therefore, Beis Din doesn't have a jurisdiction. It doesn't fall under Shlichus Sayuk. But we said, Itapas, if somebody, the one who's missing the arm, so with his other arm, you know, he grabs an amount of money from the person who owes them the money, or owes him the money, so we say, we're not going to take that amount of money away from him, because according to strict Torah law, he was entitled to that money. So the Haram HaLevi says, this only applies to money that was actually lost, but doesn't apply to knassos, like penalty amounts. Like, for example, if you stole money and there's a penalty amount of kapil, of having to pay double damages, and the like, because that's something that can only be awarded by Beis Din. And if there's no Beis Din that awarded the money, so somebody's not allowed to grab the money. So take a look at the three lines in the bottom. The Rosh says, I disagree. Says the Rosh, I disagree. Below narrowly, I don't think that's correct. I think even when it comes to knas, somebody stole $100 from you, and you grab $200 from them, not only the $100 that you were owed, you grabbed an extra $100 as well, which was the kapal amount. Says that lav takanta hila dina hu demidoraisi. Says it's not a takana, okay, that we're giving this extra amount, okay, that would be, say, the knas. Eladinahu, this is what is really a person is obligated to pay on a Torah level. It's just that we do not have a Beis Din outside of Eretz Yisrael that can compel the payment of that amount of money. So the Rosh uses a very interesting Rosh, and he says, in this type of situation, a person is allowed to take the law into their own hands, And we do not take away from him even the knas, even that extra amount. Now, if this extra amount that he's taking would simply be, you know, something that is an extraordinary, you know, remedy based on expediency that we allow, but has nothing to do with a judicial function, so why would he be allowed to keep a knas, which is something that, according to Torah law, has to be awarded by a Bezdin. A Bezdin has to award a knas. So from this rush, various later authorities conclude that the theory behind this, and we saw this in the Lashon of the Nemuke Yosef as well, that the theory behind Avid Inishtin Lanafshe must be that we allow a person in certain exigent situations to become the dayan of the case for himself, by himself. That he serves in that judicial function. Now, if you take a look in Source 7, here's where you have of Shmuel, the Shiurim of Rav Shmuel Vizansky. Rav Shmuel Vizansky, as you may know, was a Rosh Yeshiva in Panovich, from the 1940s until the 1970s. He was one of the triumvirate of the great Rosh Yeshiva at the time in Panovich, of Shach and Rav Pabarsky, and it was Rav Shmuel Vizansky. He was the third one of that triumvirate. And his chidushim were all collected in Chidushei Rabbeinu Shmuel. So in his chidushim, he comes up with a different approach, and this is based on a halacha which is quoted later on in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tavkuf Aleph of what to do when somebody comes into your property and has no rights, a trespasser of your property. So we say over there, you're allowed to kick the person out of your you're allowed to kick the person out of your property. And there's a discussion about third parties who are intervening as well. So he says, based on analysis of all the halachas, he says, Habia b'gemara hu, the Gemara dana, ila ba'adin, ika din kefiya lafushe me isura. That do we say that a ba'adin, that somebody who is personally affected by what a criminal or what a trespasser or what a ganav is doing, he's the personal victim, is he allowed to take steps in order to separate the offender from the isser that the offender has committed? In other words, he says all of Klal Yisrael have a responsibility to remove a person from sin. I would have thought that if you are the one who was harmed by that sin, maybe you're too much of a nogeya b'davar to be allowed to do this. The chiddush of Avi Inish in Lanafshe, says Shmuel Mizansky, is that even though you're a nogeya b'davar, even though you might be deemed to have a conflict of interest, you're still allowed to tear another person away from the iser that he committed against you yourself, even though you're the beneficiary of being mafish meisura because it was a stolen item and you're the one that's going to get the stolen item back. Really, that's what's going on. So one nafkamina as to whether I understand Ovid Inish Dina Lanafshe as a principle of I am allowed for my own purposes because I would otherwise suffer extreme loss or otherwise suffer temporary loss or temporary inconvenience, so I'm allowed to serve in a judicial function, so I might say that is a special dispensation we only give to the party himself and not to third parties to intervene. If I say that the theory behind the law is lafushe meisura, so then it's like a kavachomer. If I'm allowed to do it for myself, certainly other parties would be allowed to intervene and do it on my behalf. So that's one very important nafkamina between the two different theories of Inish Dina Lanafshe. Now, we raise the question whether it only applies to the davar chepes hamevur, to an object which was the object that clearly belongs to me, or whether I could take other things as well in collateral. So we said if it's a loan, I'm clearly not allowed to take other things in collateral because that is a violation of Torah law. It's a violation of Bachutz Ta'amon. It's a violation of Torah law that I'm not allowed to take collateral for money owing from a loan. But let's say it's not a loan. Let's say that I was a worker and I just want to, you know, take something from my wages. I'm a landlord and I want to be able to collect rent from my tenant, okay? I'm a lender, but I'm not collecting from the borrower, I'm collecting from the guarantor. So the Shulchan Aruch elsewhere seems to indicate that there is some wiggle room when it comes to this. So what's the question? So there's a sugya in Brachos that this whole issue revolves around, and there really are two different approaches in the poskim as to whether a person has a right to take some other object or whether they don't have the right to take some other object. So that's the Gemara Brachos, talks about Rav Huna. Akuna suffered a terrible financial loss. Takifu le Abba Mea Dani Dechamer. He lost 400 barrels of wine. Abba Gabi Rav Yudah Achud Rav Selah Chesidah Rabbanan. The rabbis came and they said, well, we have to check your deeds to see what terrible thing you did to deserve this punishment. Interesting. So Amalu Michashim Nambe Naichu. So he said, are you suspecting me that I did anything wrong? I'm like, I'm Rapuna, I'm pretty good. So Amalu Michashim Kutshe Bricho David Dina Below Dina Below Dina. So they said, looked at Rapuna and they said, and are you accusing Kaddish Baruch Hu of exacting justice against you without due cause? If a Kaddish Baruch Hu caused you to suffer loss, obviously you must have done something wrong. Okay, fine. If anybody heard of anything that I did wrong, just tell me. Okay, just tell me. I want to know. So Amalei, well, we did hear something. We heard that you did not give the due share of the twigs of the vines from your vineyard to the sharecropper who works on your vineyard. You didn't give him. He works very hard for you, and you didn't give him his share of the twigs that he was supposed to receive. So Rapuna said, you know why I didn't give him anything? I gave him because you got him. He's a got him. He's stealing from me left and right. So that's why I don't give him his fair share, because he takes much more than his fair share. So why should I give him, you know, the portion that he would normally be entitled to when I know that he's grabbing so much stuff on his own? So Amalei, they said, that's not a good justification. So they said to Rav Huna, no, because that's if you steal from the ganav, then you yourself are a ganav. If there is no clear right that you have to these items and you're withholding it from the sharecropper, so then you're guilty of ganeva yourself. So a number of the poskim say, based on this sugya in Maseches Brachos, so they say, so we see from here that in the event that you have that you're taking an item that is not clearly yours, but you're just offsetting some sort of a claim that you have against somebody else by taking an item, so then you have no right to do that. And that's because otherwise, why would Rav Huna have been punished? And Rav Huna clearly would not have taken the item if he didn't feel that he was entitled to it. So there are different ways of explaining this, because, yes?
According to this business, it seems there's no such thing as a criminal.
No such thing as a criminal.
Yes, because they said, first of all, let's see what you did wrong, and you were punished because of what you did wrong.
No, but it doesn't mean that first of all, his suffering was that the 400 bottles of wine went bad. They went bad. It's not like somebody else had stolen them from him. They just went bad. They turned them into vinegar.
I thought someone took it.
No. They turned into vinegar. And then when he did tshuva for it, in fact, the Gemara concludes that there was a happy ending, that all of the barrels of wine, all the vinegar turned back into wine again, or the price of vinegar went skyrocketed, so it became, you know, worth just as much as it would have been worth had it been wine. So it was a happy ending. Don't worry. Everything worked out in the end for Rapuna. Don't worry about it. We took care of him, the Gemara. Okay. But the lesson is very, very, you know, it's a very important lesson. But the question is, so halakha lemaisa, what do we derive from the lesson? So different authorities derive different things. According to the Sma says, well, it's not that you're not allowed, if it's not a loan, that you wouldn't be allowed to offset the claim by taking the law into your own hands. It's just that then you would only be allowed to go so far as to try to take something back, but you wouldn't be allowed to hit the guy. Okay, you'll be happy with this. I say, in such a case, you wouldn't be allowed to physically harm the person, okay, if you weren't actually taking back your own object, okay? And the Taz says, no, in such a case, you're allowed to pursue the claim, and you can go after the person directly, but only after you've received Rishus Bezdin. In other words, if it's not your actual object, then you're going to require Rishus Bezdin. And the Kesef HaKadshim says, you know what the case of Rapuna was and why in that case he wasn't allowed to take anything? Because other than he himself, who knew for sure that he had this sense that this person was stealing from him, he wasn't there to watch the sharecropper stealing from him. He just had that general suspicion of the sharecropper. That's not good enough. It has to be something which could really be provable in the Bezdin, and he did not have a case that was strong enough that it would have been provable in the Bezdin. It was just in his own mind, and therefore that's not considered to be good enough. Yes.
Sorry about so many questions.
No, questions are great.
Two quick questions. First of all, you say the Beit
we don't have to finish everything tonight. So it'll be
the
two parts.
Gives you the right to reclaim your property. It'd be like a writ of replevin, an enforceable writ that says I can go and take this.
That's what the Taz is saying.
Okay.
The Taz is saying, but the Taz is saying, so I only need that if it's not my property. If it is my actual property, then you would be allowed to just go and take it even without the rishus of the bezdin.
Oh, so it's not like a replevin.
This is only if it would not be your property. You're just, you know, taking something in order to reimburse yourself for some property of yours that was taken away, and that property is no longer extant, and you're taking something else instead. So then you would need a writ from the bezdin, a writ of replevin.
Well,
it's not replevin, recovery.
It would be like a judgment. Like
right. So, yeah, that you would be allowed to, you know, foreclose on, you know, assets or marshal or somebody else's assets. Right.
Second question, you know, using the mice of Rahuna, you know, and it's, I guess this is maybe why it's hard sometimes to put a legal system in a theology. You've got the subjective component. Rahuna, they came to Rahuna, they said, your bottle's turned to vinegar, let's examine your deeds, why is the Kaddish Baruch Hu doing this to you? What's to stop some guy from coming to the Beit Din and say, yeah, look, I punished him because I know his deeds are unworthy, and I know Hashem would want to punish, and I took it upon myself to do the Ratzon Hashem.
If so you're a murderer of somebody because you feel that this person, you know, deserved it, you are still guilty of murder, okay? It does not make a difference. That's why we say Megagolin Kova Ayadei Chayev, that if somebody deserves to be killed, we see to it that the person who kills them is somebody who himself is a murderous thug, and this way we're able to put that person to death as well. Okay, that we do not reward anybody for committing a crime, even if the victim, min hashamayim, deserve to be punished. It's considered to be much more virtuous and meritorious not to be the agent of punishment. If you're the agent of punishment, so then you become deserving of punishment yourself.
Slipping off the ladder?
All the atayft that's filled for serpent up ayach yitufun, as it says in Pirkei Avos.
Like falling off the ladder.
That's like for like the case of Elokim Navi Ado, the falling off the ladder.
That's
that you have, you know, the person that the person who falls off the ladder is going to have to go to the Ari Mikla because on some level they are culpable because we say Megagolin, you know, Chova Al Yedei Chayim, Megagolin Sukus Al Yedei Zakai. Okay, so that's the answer to your question.
Why is he in Beit Din if somebody didn't cause him the loss?
I'm sorry?
Why is Rav Huna talking to the Beit Din at all if nobody else caused him the loss?
He's not talking to the Beit Din, he's talking to his friends. The rabbis came to visit him. The rabbis said they felt bad for him. He's like, and he's sort of sad. He's suffering. He lost 400 barrels of wine. Okay, so the rabbis came and they visited Rav Yehuda, Ahud, Rav Salah, Chassidah, Rabbanim. A bunch of rabbis came and they said to him, listen, you suffered a big loss and we're here to console you and we're here to help you out. Okay, if we can figure out what you did wrong, then maybe we'll be able to get you back on your feet. It really was very a constructive exercise because after they figured out what he did wrong and then he was able to acknowledge this and they were able to get him back on his feet. He said, Amaluk He said, I now accept upon myself that I'm going to give those twigs that I owe the sharecropper. That as a reward for that, his vinegar turned into wine, and some said, that the vinegar became very valuable, and he was able to sell it for the price of the wine. So it was a constructive exercise. Everybody wasn't a Bezdin proceeding per se. I don't think so. Okay. So if we take a look at the halacha as it's codified in the Shulchan Aruch, this brings us, all of this is really the introduction to just understanding the way in which the halacha is actually codified in the Shulchan Aruch. It's a short siman, but it's laden with all kinds of ramifications and implications. So says the Mechaber, Yachal Adam Lasus Din Le'atzmo. A person is allowed to take the law into his own hands or her own hands. So number one, if they see their own property in the hands of somebody who stole it, they can take it from the other person's hands. As I said, the Shulchan Aruch does not have Ben Bagbag's reservation that it only has to be an open and notorious fashion and not in furtive fashion. But the Smag and the Smak, both say that this is included in the halakha, that it has to be an open and notorious fashion. And one of the reasons for that is an interesting distinction between that the Tshuva Sarif has between Geneva and Gezela. The gezela, what is the problem with the gezela that I'm openly taking away another person's possessions? The problem is that I'm stealing something that isn't mine. But if it would be mine, so then I'm not committing a crime, then everything is perfectly fine. With geneva, there's a separate problem that the act itself implies that you're sort of furtively trying to avoid the authority of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. It's almost as if by doing something surreptitiously, you're implying that, oh, nobody sees me, and even a Kaddish Baruch Hu doesn't see me. So that act itself, the very act of geneva, is problematic in its essence. So even if the object belongs to you, the fact that you have engaged in this sort of furtive way of taking an object is an insult to the notion that a Kaddish Baruch Hu sees everything, and there is no such thing as being able to escape with doing something in secret beyond the notice of he who is all-seeing. So since geneva is just intrinsically problematic, therefore even when you're taking back that which really belongs to you, it's considered to be criminal on some level. But again, on some level, it's almost it's like
an act of kafira.
Right.
That's really
so that's
why. Doing
so
it.
Some say, well, yeah, but if this was the only way you're able to take it without getting into a fist fight, maybe it's not such a terrible thing. So almost everybody will say that since it's not brought down the halacha, the chatzchila, you should do things in the ben bag bag way. But b'di'evit, if you didn't, then we'll let you we'll give you a pass.
Ma'achir
ome kenegdo. What?
Rabbi Karlov clearly felt this more appropriate.
Well, Rabbi Karlov did both, right? Because I mean, first of all, just for the record, everything that he does is kedas ukedin, okay? And that's why I'm quoting him because I revere him. He's a rebbe of mine. But I think obviously he was showing. I mean, he made sure to go over. He wasn't like really like putting it down surreptitiously. He just happened to take it off the shelf, and at that moment, the person screamed out. But of course, he was going to show the person. He did show the person that it belongs to him. Ma'achir ome kenegdo. If the person stands up against him, then he's allowed to whack the person until the person leaves him alone and lets him take what belongs to him. If he's not able to rescue the item in any other way, even if he would not otherwise suffer a loss, and that is assuming that he can establish and prove that this really belongs to him. So what do we see from here? We see that the Mechaber requires both of these components that we spoke about. Number one, that it is an item, right? That's his own item, a chepetz that belongs to him. And number two, that he has to be able, like the Muke Yosef said, he has to be able to have been able to be mevarer in a bezdin that it belonged to him. But nonetheless, he's not allowed to take an item that is not the specific item belongs to him. He's not allowed to grab a different item as collateral. So that clearly is the opinion of the Mechaber, and that, as we mentioned, is consistent with the Sugya Maseches Brachos regarding Rav Huna, right? Says the Ramah, mitam she's borrowed the command, okay, b'yesham nedavka b'chobo mamish, when chayav lo below abos, the Ramah brings the other opinion that says that if it's not in the context of a loan, it's like a landlord picking up, the rent, or it's a worker trying to take his wages, or a lender taking not from the borrower, from a guarantor, oshein sarach lamashka, so then, the Ramah brings the opinion that it would be permissible. Oshein sarach lamashka no kikfar eslo v'pigad, and a matzo biyad achim mutal etofso. Then he quotes to Rivash, what if you happen to have a pikadon? You had an object that this individual who took from you or owes you, you have an item that wasn't given to you by him as collateral, but you happen to have an object that he's safekeeping with you. Can you then keep this as part of your counterclaim as an offset against the claim that you have against that individual? So says the Ramah, that would certainly be okay as well. So this is quoted by the Katzos. The Katzos quotes of this approach, saying, well, maybe even if you hold that you wouldn't be allowed to grab a different object that wasn't yours in satisfaction of a debt or an obligation the person owes you, but if you already have in your possession a pikadon or something of that sort, so then you can continue to maintain that in your possession. So
he
says that he thinks would be okay. It doesn't appear that the Mechaber would necessarily agree with that.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I don't know how familiar you are with all of the writings of the Katzos HaKoshin, but for the most part, he's very much a nuts and bolts legal, you know, rigorous, analytical, rationalist thinker. But in this particular case, the Ksos actually brings a Zohar concluded halacha lemaise resolution of this particular question. And he says that from the Zohar, it appears that it is not proper even to keep a pikadon that was placed in your safekeeping for this purpose, because since it was given to you as a pikadon, it's just a violation of basic ne'emanus, of basic faithfulness. When you told somebody you're going to hold it for safekeeping and return it to them, even though now you have a valid reason not to return it to them, but he says that since you had originally taken into your possession as a pikadon in the terms of establishing a certain integrity of your commitment, so it's never proper to violate the integrity of the commitment that you had originally undertaken. So says the Ketos, therefore, for that reason, he would be against doing it, even though Mi'ikara din, that would be all right.
Then the remark, yes?
How do you reconcile
the Agadata Rav Huna with the Ramaz?
So you would have to learn, if there are different ways of reconciling it. One of the ways you can reconcile is it's like the Kesef HaKachim. The Kesef HaKachim says Rav Huna's case was different. Why? Because he did not have a provable case in Beis Din. But if you did have a provable case in Beis Din, so then you would be allowed to take even a different form of collateral. We'll just complete, we'll finish here. So says the Ramah, and this part really is, I don't think, a disagreement with the Mechaber, but this is the Ramah simply giving a counterpoint from what he just mentioned, because he just mentioned the possibility of taking a different item. So he says there are those who say you can only take an item which is the actual item that belongs to you. If the person stole the item from you, but he quotes the Mordecai and the Nemuke Yosef, basically, that we read that Nemuke Yosef, that says that otherwise you would not be allowed to take it. And then the next part of the Ramah is what we mentioned beforehand regarding how you shouldn't do this through an Akum, but we'll get to that next time. We have to share, we'll do part two next week. Thank you.